You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastian.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
You can kill anything with a 20 gauge that you can kill with a 12. I tell all my students, don't get caught up in that. I have to shoot a 12 gauge because I can tell you right now, it's the Indian, not the arrow. If you miss, it ain't because the gun was off. As much as you want to blame it on bent barrels, it's just a matter of, did you keep your head down in the gun? Were you looking at the bird or were you looking at the bead? You just need to remember that they make more than one gun for a really good reason. So take your time.
Hey, Bird Dog Babes. My name is Courtney Bastian, and I am obsessed with all things bird dogs. And I'm here to share with you the stories, experiences, knowledge, and opinions from the women and a few guys in the industry that are killing it. I'm a Wisconsin girl living in a Montana world, mom and two incredible kiddos, wife and occasional assistant to a pro gun dog trainer, traveling the U.S. talking about canine nutrition while hunting, raising, and competing with my German wirehair pointers and Brocchi Italiano. As someone who started hunting later in life because I wanted to give my dogs the opportunity to do what they were bred to do, I'm here to help inspire, educate, and connect women to get their bird dogs out in the field and experience a bond like no other. So pour yourself a glass of wine and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. This is the Bird Dog Babe Podcast. Patreon patrons, you won't want to miss the next Beyond the Podcast live session this Thursday, April 22nd at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Linda Hintz, my guest from episode 53, Talk Turkey to Me, is joining us for a deep dive into turkey calling. I texted her tonight to verify and asked if we are learning about slate calls, and she replied that she's going to talk friction, box, pot style, push button, natural sounds, mouth calls. She's going to teach us how to yelp, cluck, putt, purr, cut, cackle, and discuss kiki and gobble, and even get into blind setup in some scenarios. And coming from someone who has yet to pull that monster tom down from the ridge onto my property, you bet I'm beyond stoked for Thursday night. If you aren't a patron of this podcast yet, head over to patreon.com/thebirddogbabe to sign up for $5. I hope to see you there. My guest today is Kate Onstrom. Kate is providing a way forward for men, women, and youth that have an interest in shooting sports and bird hunting. As a shooting instructor and owner of Virginia Shooting Sports, Kate shares her story about getting into shooting sports and hunting, along with advice on finding the ideal shotgun, suggestions for practice in the off season, and what most of us are doing wrong. All right, let's get after it. This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan. What makes a great bird dog is genetics, training, and nutrition, and that's why I trust and feed Purina Pro Plan. With over 500 nutritionists, veterinarians, and scientists on staff, ProPlan delivers a full spectrum of performance and specialized dog food formulas to help bird dogs like yours excel at every stage of life. Purina supports us, the breeders, owners, and trainers, the events we compete in, our national breed clubs, canine health research, and our committed partners to conservation groups such as Pheasants Forever, Rough Grouse Society, and Ducks Unlimited. 95 out of the top 100 dogs are fueled by the advanced nutrition of Purina Pro Plan. This episode is also presented by Boss Shot Shells. Copper-plated bismuth Boss provides a better, more effective non-lead option than steel and are safe to use in Grandpa's gun. Available in 10, 12, 16, 20, 28 gauge, and 410, direct-to-consumer pricing and cases shipped right to your door. Shoot Boss. Pattern your shotgun to make more clean and ethical shots, reduce crippling, and remove lead from the uplands, wetlands, and all lands. Find out more at BossShotShells.com. A big shout out to the people and the partners that are helping me to keep the MP3s rolling for this podcast. My Patreon patrons, the bread and butter, the peeps, the community of like-minded individuals that are eager to learn and offer to contribute. Join us for $5 per month on patreon.com/thebirddogbabe for exclusive discounts, content, and live Q&A sessions. 5% of your contribution goes to the AKC Canine Health Foundation, and another 5% goes to conservation. Dakota 283, unparalleled protection for your dog's travel to and from your next adventure. My favorite is the G3 kennel, which has a recessed handle on top that makes it easy for me to lift in and out of my truck. The keyed panel latching door makes me feel at ease on trips when I have to leave dogs in my truck when I stop for fuel. An added bonus is the drain hole in the back, which makes cleaning a breeze when my dog has been run hard and put away wet. Go to Dakota283.com and use promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off. And by Siren, shotguns for women. Siren carries the only full line of women's shotguns. They are dedicated to providing the equipment and knowledge that makes shooting and hunting more enjoyable and less stressful. Newer season hunter, Siren offers multiple options that fit right out of the box. No more compromises. Go to SirenUSA.com and check out all the options available for upland, waterfowl, sporting, and trap shotguns. And while you're there, say hello to Julia, Siren's new 12-gauge sporting that is one of the most stunning shotguns I've laid my eyes on. Also by Big Frig, roto-molded coolers with heavy-duty latches, dual stainless steel lock plates that double as bottle openers. They also have dry boxes, tumblers, and growlers. And my favorite, the ability to customize the tumblers and coolers. Head to thebirddogbabe.com/bigfrig to view the wide array of sizes and colors available. There's a Badlands cooler perfect for your way of life. Good morning, Kate, and welcome to the podcast.
Good morning, Courtney. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. This has been a topic that a lot of the listeners reach out and they ask me about, but I am not a shooting instructor by any means, as I still live the daily struggle of the hustle to improve my shooting. And I'm super stoked to hear about what you're all going to share with us as far as tips and tricks and how to improve our shooting here during the off season.
Absolutely. So, I live in Central Virginia, and I am very blessed with our weather here is usually pretty conducive to letting us be outside for the majority of the year. So, I get to go out and play and hunt and teach almost, I'd say probably about 300 plus days out of the year. I'm the owner of Virginia Shooting Sports. It's a wing shooting and sporting clay school dedicated to opening the demographic of the average shooter. And that's exactly what I strive to do every day that I go to work.
So you basically have a dream job, your dream job.
Yeah. And you know, Courtney, every day I get up and, you know, I'm headed out here shortly to go and teach down at one of my courses for the day. And, every day I get up to do that, I still just kind of have to pinch myself and go, wow, I'm doing this. This is happening.
That's incredible. So what are you teaching today?
So today I've got two students who are already existing clients. Both are competition shooters. And the first one really doesn't care if he ever shoots anything feathered. He just loves, this is a retirement gig for him. He loves going and shooting competition clays. And this is his way to stay out and stay active. He's in his mid-70s. And I think you'll find that with this particular industry, this sport, it doesn't matter the age, infirmity, or location. You can do it no matter what. It's just going to be at different levels, but it's still a great way to keep active, keep outside, and keep engaged.
Right.
My other student, he is also a competition shooter, but he wants to get into hunting. And then my final lesson of the day is actually the last couple of hours. It's a hunt prep. for two gentlemen that are part of a bigger group that I'm taking out this Sunday, which sadly closes out my preserve season for the year. But with the temperatures, like today in Virginia, it's going to be 84 degrees. So I'm not that sad that we're closing out the season this week.
Sure.
It's getting pretty warm for two-legged and four-legged beasties alike to be right out in the fields.
Right. So what does a hunt prep look like? What are you going to do with them?
So these, one gentleman has been out with me before. The other gentleman is a friend of his that he's trying to get into upland hunting. So for Russ, it's going to be a little bit of a review, and for Bill, it's just going to be a complete introduction. And what I do is we start off with basically just some warm-up shots, just getting everybody comfortable with making sure they have a proper shoulder mount, going over trail shooting methods, because that's typically what we use in the hunt field. And then we kind of get into the parlances of the field, because they're not going to be just in the field by themselves. We have other guns. We've got the guide. We've got myself. We've got dogs. We've got connecting hunt fields around us. So huge segment on safety and how to be in the field and stay safe. I do a lot with if a bird gets up in front of you and stays low. If a bird gets up and goes over top and you still want to take that shot, but the bird is directly overhead, how to safely turn and pivot and get back into the bird. If the bird goes into the woods, that's always a fun one, especially with this weather getting hot. I never seem to have a shortage of people raising their hand that they want to be the one to get in the woods and cool off in the shade a little bit. But there's a lot of different things that we cover. Again, just basically how to stay safe and what to expect on the hunt. And basically just trying to get people more excited about getting in the field and doing it more.
Okay. Are you typically with these, are you guiding with your personal dogs or are they bringing in their own?
So I don't ever let students bring their own dogs. Two reasons. One, if they're in a group and they typically will not know the other guns in that group, the worst case scenario is I have some other random gun that has shot my student's dog in the middle of the hunt field.
Oh gosh.
I would never ever want to place a student's animal in that position because most all of my hunts are beginner hunts. Mm-hmm. I do have some very dedicated clients that hunt with me throughout the year and often. That's a different case scenario. And actually all of them have now progressed and gone on and gotten their own dogs. So I imagine they'll be kind of breaking away and going on more hunts by themselves. And that's exactly what I want to happen. I want you to graduate from me. But for those that are new to this, I never let them bring their dog if they have one. Also, they're never going to be able to enjoy the hunt. They're going to be so busy trying to work the dog.
Right.
That they're not going to be able to shoot. And if yeah, quite frankly, if you're at the level where you can work your dog and shoot, you don't need me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is all about getting more guns into the field and more people into the sport.
I love it. So you have your short hairs out there then?
I actually have a 5 month old, actually about 5.5 months old, Little Lacey Blues. Her mother is my favorite dog to hunt over in the entire world. And we had the opportunity to purchase a puppy and brought Lacey home, I think it was December 20th of last year. So ended a terrible year with such a fabulous highlight. But she will be in the hunt field with me, with my husband working her for clients.
Okay.
So that I can concentrate on clients and he can work Lacey. So next year we're going to be adding another either full sister or half sister. So in about 3 years, I imagine we'll have our own little GSP fleet.
Right. Well, and that's a lot of, commitment to just the dog aspect of it, to be working around the novice shooters that you have. So, what are some of your expectations for the dogs that that you're putting out with them as far as steadiness levels?
Yeah, she, I'm sure all your listeners out there have had that moment where they have that pup and they see that pup point for the first time. And although you've seen that 1,000 times with other dogs, something about having your dog go on point for that first time, it's just absolutely, I was standing in the field and I was looking at everyone going, oh my God, Lacey's pointing. And they're looking at me going, well, duh. She's a pointer. Like, you don't understand. It's my dog.
You're right.
And yeah. And then she started honoring and backing the other dogs that we were running her with.
Wow.
Which were far more seasoned, 5, 6-year-old Llewellyn setters. And that just completely, I walked through half the field with my mouth dragging through the cover just because I couldn't believe she was already doing that. But
you're like, just watch for the bird. I'm going to keep my eyes on the dog for a minute here.
Yeah. Just phone clicking away a million miles a minute, just taking pictures after pictures.
But right.
For students, having steady dogs is everything. Mm-hmm. Having dogs bump birds because these guns, I have people that are literally kind of Elmer Fudding a little bit. They've got the gun up on their shoulder and they're trying to creep along instead of keeping the gun down, where a more seasoned shooter would have the gun getting ready for flush versus in a mounted position waiting for the bird. So they need to have everything more orchestrated as a new shooter. And that's fine. And I tell people, I make no bones about it, my hunts for beginner shooters are highly orchestrated. Mm-hmm. We plant the birds a particular way. We use particular guides with certain dogs because those dogs are so tremendously steady, and they retrieve back to hand very neatly and cleanly. And it's in ways a show, but it's a show that gets people so excited and realize, and I tell people too, this is a hunt at this level. Not every dog performs at this level. So don't go next door to your neighbor that raises a Brittany and be like, oh, this dog is going to give me exactly what I just saw, 6 months ago with Kate. It's not going to happen.
Right.
But for my students, it needs to be super safe and really, really enjoyable so that they want to come back. They want to do it again.
Right. Well, and if there were dogs just out there bumping birds all over the place, that wouldn't be an enjoyable or safe hunt. So that makes sense that they have to be at that level.
Yeah. I've personally been on hunts, where it's, sometimes it's fine. They bump a couple birds. It's not a big deal. It sometimes can be a little bit more exciting, but if it's happening every bird, every time, it gets really annoying really fast.
Right. So what about you, Kate? I want to hear more about your story and how you came into this. Have you been hunting the majority of your life?
I would love to say that I have been a huntress from decades back, but honestly, I grew up on a 400-acre farm out in Hanover in Virginia, and we lived a very subsistent lifestyle. We had numerous acres under crop. We sold our vegetables and raised hogs and chickens and all that good stuff. And so every now and then Dad would take either myself or one of my 2 younger brothers, and we would go and sit in the stand with Dad and watch Dad deer hunt. Well, that was kind of my hunting experience. But he just wanted to get us out. He just knew that was quiet downtime for us to sit and, spend time together. And fast forward, it was probably about 15 years ago that I met my now husband, and he's an avid archer and bow hunter, and said, why don't you try this with me, and bought me a $200 or $300 used bow from Green Top, our local sporting goods store. It was a 4-H bow, and kind of started it ever since. I got into archery, which got into rifle shooting, which got into shotgun shooting. And, here we are today. It was a very big snowball effect, I guess you would say.
So when did the bird dogs come into the picture?
So I have been on a quest to add a bird dog to the household for about, I'd say about 3 or 4 years now. And it was just always, oh no, we already have so much stuff. As he, quite honestly, my husband had already given in to horses and ducks and goats and, you know, the menagerie of things that we keep on the farm here. And sure. he actually didn't really see the bird dog as a separate entity other than just another mouth to feed on the farm until he got into falconry last year.
Oh, cool.
And once he got into falconry, he realized, huh, this is really terrible. I am a horrible bird dog, you know, so having to try and flush his own game, was problematic at best. And that was a catalyst that I needed, to win the argument. And I purposely had him come on a hunt with me, that I had booked for, I think it was like New Year's or Christmas last year, and had a couple of friends come with us and made sure that I had my favorite guide, Henry, and had that bad news birdie dog down in front of Mike so that he could watch her work and story over. That was it. That's all it took.
That's awesome. You hook, line, and sunk him.
Yeah. Well, and it was one of those kind of soft pushes, like, wow, isn't Birdie such a great dog? He's like, oh man, she's off the charts. She's just, that dog is just fabulous. He's like, yeah, you know, one day maybe we'll look at getting a bird dog, you know, just kind of peppering daily conversations until finally I was like, hey, you know, Birdie just had a litter. He goes, great. Does he need a check?
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we're very excited. It's definitely the next chapter in our lives. Mm-hmm. And, it just kind of feels to me like the fulfillment of everything that I'm doing is being able to have these GSPs, have my husband work them, you know, alongside me in the hunt field. He's been very instrumental with helping me with my business, mm-hmm. and being able to keep him in there, with me is very rewarding. And just another aspect to be able to share the hunt field with him.
Right. It makes, I think, life easier when you can just relate with each other so well and be on the same page with everything.
Yeah. And he tends to, he doesn't fight back as hard when I have to tell him to do stuff. So,
well, you guys have a pretty fun business, so I can't imagine.
Yeah. You know.
So is he doing the training with the dog, or what are you guys going to a NAFTA chapter? What are you doing there?
Yeah. So, she is AKC NAFTA registered, and, her mom, as well as a couple of other of Henry's dogs, do compete in field trials. So for me, it's a matter of, I need to kind of see where Lacey Blues wants to go. You know, she's currently in training right now with Neil Cotter at Oropax, Preserve. And, I'm just kind of letting her figure out what she wants to do, whether we're going to do AKC hunt test or, NAFTA or what we want to do. You know, I've already signed up members of both, and, starting to go out and see the different chapters and see the different, trials and tests, and just get a real good idea of which way we're going to head. Because, you know, in training horses for years and years and years, that's always been my big thing, is the horse is going to tell me which way they want to go, is, you know, because I've breed and train Percherons. So,
okay. Oh, cool.
Is it going to, big horses. So right. Is this horse going to be a hot hitch horse, you know, in a fancy 6-horse hitch? Is this horse going to be just a great plow horse? Is this going to be a saddle horse for somebody? Mm-hmm. You know, or is this going to be something that I just go, good Lord, why did I breed? You know, yeah.
You're already like 1,000 steps ahead of most people starting out because of your experience with the horses. And it sounds like everything you're doing there is absolutely perfect. And you said that the mother does field trials. Is it horseback field trials?
No, she doesn't do horseback. I don't know that you could get Henry near a horse.
Okay.
he's a really neat guy. He, local here in the Glen Allen area. And this is, Sundance Skyview's Bad News Birdie, I believe is Birdie's full name. And she is the 2019 Browning National Upland Classic Amateur High Point Champion. Good Lord, that's a mouthful. So Lacey Blues has some big paws to fill growing up behind her mom.
Mm-hmm.
But I am excited to be able to get out there and see Lacey compete, you know, against her mom and against the other dogs that are out from that litter.
Mm-hmm.
But
neat. I'm like seeing you on a Pertron in a field trial right now, running your puppy. It's
yeah. The only problem is if I got to get off, I can't get back on without a ladder.
Sure.
Like seriously, I use a 3-step kitchen ladder to get up on these things because they're usually about 2,100 pounds and 18 hands tall.
Right. So can you have like one of those telescope ladders that you just hitch on the back of the horse and then you can, or like hitch it onto the saddle, then you can telescope it down to get on and off of it when your dog goes on point?
I was going to say, you're going to need something. I do have a couple of friends that have taught their horses how to bow. And mm-hmm. you just step up on their knee and then pop up in the saddle. But
okay. Yeah, because, I mean, even with that, with the Percheron, you can't even teach them to park out and think that you're going to still be able to get that high.
No, not a chance.
All right, I'm deferring away from the subject here. Sorry,
I told you
I'd do that. Oh, my gosh. Okay. It's too fun, though. I get excited about people that have puppies and are doing all the things. So kudos to you for going that route and kind of letting her choose her path and what she's going to excel at. Because that's, I think, one of the most difficult parts is being able to read your dog and decide which route is going to be best for them.
Well, and I have learned, Courtney, given air opportunity and the way things go in my life, she's going to do whatever is the most expensive. So I'm sure I'll be adding a walking horse and a brand new trailer and, all of that good stuff. Cause that's just the way things roll for me.
Right. Of course. So the shooting sports, you said that you didn't hunt when you were younger, but were you shooting when you were younger?
Yeah. And, you know, for us, we didn't call it the shooting sports. We called it what we did on Saturday afternoon, you know.
Okay.
You got the BB gun or a pellet gun and went out and just set up cans. I mean, we literally, you know, growing up on a 400-acre farm, you didn't have that much to do to keep yourself occupied. I mean, I'm in my mid-40s right now. So you're talking, you know, 30 years ago, we didn't have all the things to keep us entertained that we do today.
Mm-hmm.
So jumping on your ponies and riding around and running through the woods, popping squirrels and things like that. But I never really thought of that as something somebody would actually go and seek out to do. We just kind of did it because there was nothing else to do.
Sure. But, did you go through like a time period when you like got formal training and decided?
Oh yeah.
Okay. What did that look like?
So, what I wanted to do actually was, well, let me back up. So I was a flight attendant for about 10 years with Continental, now United. So of course the natural progression in careers is flight attendant to shooting instructor. But when I was a flight attendant, because of where I traveled and everywhere I went, I wanted to be able, of course, not carry on the plane, but when I was home in Houston or, for a while I lived in Hoboken in New Jersey, lived back in Florida for a little bit. I wanted to be able to self carry, and pistol training is kind of where I started. So I sought out an instructor that worked with me on self-defense carry. And then once I was up here and started dating Mike, and he was really big into hunting, we would start going out, and I started meeting people. And I came across this one gentleman who is actually now a very, very dear friend of mine, Bill Curry. And Bill, if you ever wanted to be bored for hours on end talking about ammunition, talk to Bill.
Okay.
He is a walking encyclopedia. The man keeps journals on everything he reloads. He's one of those guys that
cool.
He shoots bullets, so he has something to reload.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So he also is a tremendous instructor for rifle and pistol. He has all these really engaging and fun different scenarios to run you through. I give him all of my New Zealand clients to get them trained to shoot out beyond 600 yards. Mm-hmm. Because he does such a great job getting them very comfortable and steady on trigger. I mean, if you're trying to take a red stag or a tar standing on a mountainside at 420 yards, you can't have the jitters. You can't be nervous. So he works with them for several months. And he gave me that same training. So I like to credit Bill with all of my shooting ability with rifle and pistol. And then, of course, Dan Schindler with the Paragon School of Sporting is the gentleman that I received my shotgun shooting certification from. After I'd completed the NRA shooting, I knew that there had to be a lot more to this. The NRA was great to get me started, and spent a week with Dan and Jeff Allen down at Premlin with some other students seeking instructor certification. And I've been very fortunate. I've had some fabulous mentors. One of my mentors right now, Tom Famarello, up in New York with Excel Sporting Clothes. He's kind of taken me under his wing, and he's actually headed down here in a couple weeks to work with me on a mental game sporting clays clinic to help competition shooters.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah. I'm always looking for education. I mean,
sure.
I'm one of those people that I know that I've got a great way to do things, but I know there's mm-hmm. always ways to tweak it. Mm-hmm. And I'm always very excited and interested to learn what can be done better. What can I fix?
Right.
What can I, not that fix is the right word. It's not like it's broken. What can I
improve?
Hone? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What can I improve? What can I do to make it easier for my students to learn? Because this is a very daunting sport.
Right.
You know, you see the guys pull up and they've got their, you know, $20,000 side by side and their gun scabbards on the back of it and their Beretta gear head to toe. And as a new shooter, you're like, holy cow, I just spent $15 to rent this beat up old shotgun and, you know, mm-hmm. another $20 on two boxes of shells. And I'm not really sure how to load it.
Right. Right.
You know, it's a little intimidating.
Yeah, it can be. So how long has your business been going?
I started Virginia Shooting Sports in September of 2017, I believe it was.
Okay.
I had previously been working under another gentleman who runs a sporting clay course just down the road from where we live. And I'd been with him for probably about 5 or 6 years and just kind of learning the back end of the business. I unfortunately learned how to work on traps. And once he figured out that I was actually pretty good at it, that just expanded and grew, you know, went from trapping to working on traps to kind of being right-hand man, helping him with events and putting together corporate shoots to creating events, to creating his website and social media and booking appointments, and then just kind of shadowing him and learning his style of teaching and instructing. And that's really what got me excited. And I was an instructor for several years in the horse industry, teaching people how to ride and work with horses. And when I was a flight attendant, I was always lead flight attendant or first galley flight attendant, teaching other flight attendants and So I've always been in some sort of leadership instructor role, and I've always enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And just expanded that within Sporting Clays, and it was just a perfect match.
Hold up just one second so I can tell you about our new launch of the Bird Dog E Academy. William and I have designed a school for bird dog owners and breeders, like legit classes, where a new module drops every week. You get a checklist, weekly assessments, and follow along with videos of several different dogs. After going through the beta phase with students, we have launched the Reliable Retrieve course. This course follows the progress and struggles of four different dogs with four different personalities. This is a little to no pressure course. You will learn to read your dog and decide which option is best for them. The best and most unique part of this course that no other online dog training course has ever offered is you will get 100% support. Weekly live Q&A sessions, a private Facebook group for you to ask questions, post videos of what you and your dog are working through, and watch other people and their dogs to help you become a better overall trainer yourself. This is a big commitment for a pro trainer, and also the reason that this particular course will only be offered 3 times a year and is limited to only 50 people. We start the Reliable Retrieve on Monday, April 19th. So head over to birddogeacademy.com to register. So are you, you're teaching all demographics then? Are you, you're not just actively seeking out to help women, you're helping everybody?
No, anybody that has the desire to get on the clay course, I want them to come and see me because I want to know that they are comfortable with me, that they've got a good, and I tell people all the time, hey, if for some reason you leave me today and I never see you again, at least I know that you will know how to safely use a cracking gun, an auto loader, and you will know the rules and regulations when you're on a sporting clay field. You'll understand how to stay safe, keep others around you safe, and understand the fundamentals of what's going on with that clay bird in front of you. You're not going to hit every bird in front of you because that just takes time and, you know, as I say, you know, shells down the barrel, but you won't stand there scratching your head going, what's going on? Why am I not able to do this?
Mm-hmm. So you have something really unique going on there that I didn't realize until now is you are really focusing on the instruction. So people aren't just coming to your place and just picking up a gun and shooting by themselves. You're actually out there with them, helping them and teaching them.
Yeah. So, and that's, there's a little misconception because people see Virginia Shooting Sports and like, oh, well, where are you located? I actually have instructor's rights at 2 fields owned by 2 different people. Central Virginia Sporting Clays is located in Palmyra, which is in between Richmond and Charlottesville, and that's owned by Brad Lancidell. And I'm usually there 3 days a week. And then my other course, which is Old Forge Sporting Clays, which is down towards New Kent, which is in between Richmond and Williamsburg. So I've got a course on the west of Richmond, and I've got a course on the east side of Richmond, which is fantastic.
You have a good spread.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tell everybody I'm a geographic anomaly. I literally drive an hour anywhere. You know, it's just I'm constantly on the road, but it's fantastic because I'm able to take care of, you know, I've got a lot of clients that come up from North Carolina, Virginia Beach, that kind of way. So they go to Old Forge. And then students coming from West Virginia, Northern Virginia, they tend to go to the Palmyra course. And Richmond, you know, you live in Richmond, you can go either way.
Okay.
It's just a matter of, do you want to drive east on 64 or west on 64? But I don't have my own field. Quite frankly, I don't know how in the world I would be able to add that extra layer with everything that I have going on. I think at that point I would definitely need staff, something more than just the dog.
Okay. So it's sporting clays and also preserve hunts.
Yes. So the preserve hunts sporting clays. I also do a ton of events throughout the year in the off season to get people just more engaged and more excited, especially with everything that happened last year. I've got one event, Shotguns and Saddles, which is a ladies' 3-day, 2-night getaway up in Shenandoah Mountains. And that sold out in a week.
That sounds amazing. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I didn't even have a chance to advertise it. I literally mentioned something on my business Facebook page, and a week later it was sold out. And I was like, well, good Lord.
How many spots do you take for it?
10.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that's a workable number for the guide, the horse guide that I'm using. And the gun club, Shenandoah Gun Club, that we're using can certainly take more shooters, but we are. So what happens is we gather together Sunday afternoon, have cocktails around the fire pit, have a yummy dinner. The next morning, everybody gets up, have a big old country cowgirl breakfast, and then saddle up and literally ride over the mountain because we're right in Swope on the Shenandoah National Park. And ride over the mountain from where the outfitter is located and drop down into the gun club, tie up the horses, grab up the guns, and get to shooting clay birds. Yeah, then we, you know, have a really nice lunch, ride back over the mountain, a little bit longer route, just a little bit more ride in, and then fly fish and relax around the pond and around the bunkhouse and have a
super big old fun
baked dinner. And then the next day, everybody can just kind of disperse at their leisure. And, you know, it's just a fun getaway. Just,
right.
It's kind of selfishly combining all the stuff I love, you know, horses, fly fishing, and shooting shotguns.
Yeah. Are you giving instruction too then when people are shooting at the range there?
Yeah. So all of my events always include instruction.
Okay.
And it's because, yes, it's fun to pull the trigger, but it's a lot more fun to pull the trigger and see that clay bird explode.
Absolutely.
So it's, I always try and find two or three key points to work on with a group. If it's kind of all the same level, let's say they're all real beginners, then we're going to work on how to properly mount the gun, appropriate sight picture with the bird barrel relationship out in the field, and just make them comfortable with the gun. You know, more experienced groups. My ladies practice that I had a couple of weeks ago at Old Forge, we worked on crossing birds at distance, which got a lot of moans and groans until the girls realized it wasn't that difficult. It's just different. So we always try and pick something to work on, a particular skill set. So that way it's always exciting. You know, it's always something new.
And you as a female instructor is a rarity in itself. I mean, do you know many other women that do what you do?
I do. And I honestly say, I think I can count them on maybe one hand, maybe borrow a finger or two from the other side. There's not a lot of us out there, and there's like zero women of color that are instructors that I know of. But I mean, I tell people all the time, they come up and say, oh, you must know so-and-so, they're a real big shooter. I'm like, I'm really sorry. It's not that I'm ignorant or anything like that. I'm a one woman show. So I am doing everything, you know, everything from front end of business to back end of business. But I know that I have seen an increase in my demographic. It was pretty much when I started, you know, when I started on my own in 2017, it was pretty much, I would say, you know, white women, 40s and 50s. Kids are growing or grown, and they're looking for something fun to do. Now I'm seeing everyone from every walk of life. I am seeing people come out, and it, like I said, it used to be kind of, oh, I just want something fun to get out and try. I've seen a real big push for hunting. I've got quite a few people that have come to me saying, I think if push comes to shove, if I had to, I could pick up a shotgun and probably be able to go and find a bird. I'm like, well, I wish it was that easy, but let's get you started. Right. You know, the wild birds, that's a whole nother conversation, but it lets them have the confidence in a particular skill set that you just don't find in the everyday average person. Mm-hmm. So it kind of is a confidence booster. I know for a lot of people, I've got some younger students that are athletes that their personality is a little more timid, a little more shy.
Sure.
And it just seems to be a confidence builder. You know, I can do this. I can pick up this shotgun and shoot that clay bird and connect the dots and make it happen. Mm-hmm. So
what do you think? I mean, do you have people coming in, students that, I mean, whether they're man or woman, that they have mentioned to you that they're grateful that you are a woman instructor and that they have more relatability?
Yeah, actually that happened to me about 2 weeks ago. I was at one of my courses and was going inside of the clubhouse and getting my stuff together, waiting on my student who was a woman to show up, and she pulls up and I walk out to meet her and get her all sorted on the golf cart and stuff. And I noticed this other lady who was kind of hanging around, and I kind of figured she was waiting for one of the guys there to give her a lesson. And she looks right at me and she goes, "You're an instructor?" I said, "Yes, ma'am. You know, nice to meet you. My name's Kate Onstrom. I own Virginia Shooting Sports." And she goes, "Well, I'm going to take this lesson with this guy, but I need your card so I can give you a call." And I said, "You know, I appreciate that." I was like, "Please understand, because of the dynamic that I'm at his course,
yeah,
I don't want to give you the card, but I will tell you my cards are inside on the fridge."
Sure. Right.
You know, but I do, I hear it a lot. And I think it's just because it's not that women don't want to have a male instructor. There is just something much more relatable. There is something much more comfortable about having a female instructor. I don't know. I've seen the full gamut of some women have come to me and they've told me some horrible story about some guy who basically was barking at them, not particularly teaching them anything, but was rather abrasive and gruff, and I guess felt the need to show how safe and confident he was in what he was doing, that it just came across really abrasive.
Okay.
You know, I've had some just say, "No, I know I can't learn anything from my husband, so I'll be damned if I go pay some guy money." So.
Right. But in the same token, have you found some challenges with being a woman instructor?
Oh, yeah.
That it's been kind of blatantly clear to you because you're a woman?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's an everything. And then, you know, my husband and I have conversations all the time about how my lessons go. And it doesn't happen a lot. And I think because, I mean, I'm 6 foot tall. And, you know, I'm a big girl. So I carry myself with, you know, that kind of stronger type A personality. So it tends to stifle any possible situations.
Sure.
But I do every now and then run into that dad that just, he's going to help me out every minute of this lesson with his son or daughter. And I try to be very kind about it, but in the same token, it's, do you want me to teach your kid or do you want to keep interrupting my flow? Mm-hmm. And the kid's like visibly getting agitated that dad just won't keep quiet. And I've had some kids turn around and go, "Dad, Kate knows what she's doing." Mm-hmm. But, and they just want to help, but I don't know that they realize that it comes across as, I don't know, not condescending. I don't know that that's the right word, but it's just, it comes across wrong.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, well, what about their feet? I'm like, well, what about their feet? Their toes aren't pulling the trigger. Their hands are. I'm worried more about how they're shouldering the gun. I'll deal with the bottom half once we get the top half fixed. Hmm. You know, they tend to be quick to point things out. I also, this is another thing, and this actually really bothers me. So for anybody out there listening, don't think that just because you've got a 14-year-old boy in front of you that he needs to shoot a 12 gauge.
Okay.
There is no shame in anybody picking up a 20 gauge or even a 28 gauge. I have noticed that because we are not the active world that we used to be 20 years ago, I've got quite a few students that by looking at them, you would say, oh, you know, there's a 16, 17-year-old guy, you know, he shouldn't have any problem picking up a 12 gauge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he needs to use my 20 gauge A400 that's nice and super light because he physically can't go the 2 hours shooting with me, not so much from the recoil, but just the weight of the gun. You know, you've got 7+ pounds sticking out 2 feet in front of you. You're asking a lot if you don't physically stay engaged every day and work that particular set of muscles. And I get a lot of dads, moms don't tend to do it because moms are like, hey, I got him here. He's all yours.
Right.
But dads, they're like, oh no, my son's going to shoot, you know, he's going to shoot that 1 ounce 20 gauge load or, you know, it's fine. We just need to squash a clay bird. We just need 3 BBs to hold hands. We're not trying to squash a duck. There's no reason for this to hurt. This is way too fun of a sport to complicate it with, you know, beat up muscles and busted cheeks.
Mm-hmm. So what is your recommendation for women and which gauge is ideal for them to shoot for hunting purposes?
The one that they're comfortable with. I tell everyone all the time. So typically what happens, somebody calls me up, says, hey, you know, I found you on the old internet there and looks like you teach people how to shoot birds, clay and feathered. And I want you to teach me. And they come and they take a lesson. They might buy a package and take a couple lessons, but at some point, usually, sometimes right after the first lesson, they're looking at me foaming at the mouth saying, okay, I'm going to go to Green Top next and go buy a gun. I'm like, oh goodness, no. You need to shoot for about 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months. You need to figure out, you need to know a couple of things. First off, are you just going to shoot clay or are you going to shoot clay and feather? If you're going to shoot feather, is that going to be particularly upland? Or is that going to be woodcock and grouse? Or is that going to be waterfowl? If you are someone who has had experience in hunting, you're probably going to lean more towards purchasing a 12 gauge. And I, right off the bat, I tell everybody waterfowling, that's a whole nother beast.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take your really nice, you know, Siren Tempo cracking gun into the duck blind. Get that waterfowler. That's what they're for. You know, they double as a boat paddle if you need it. But you need to figure out what you want to do. And then from there, shoot a bunch of guns. You know, I'm on the pro staff for Siren Cesar Guarini Fab Arm. I absolutely love their guns. I've sold quite a few for them to students because I have no problem bringing in a demo gun and letting somebody shoot a couple of different guns and seeing what they want and having that serious conversation of, okay, so you tell me you want to shoot upland birds, but you also like to shoot clay. So let's look at that Tempio Sporting because you might want, you know, you're going to carry a little bit heavier gun in the field, but in the off season, you're telling me that you're going to be shooting a bunch of clay, whereas in the hunting season, you might only get a chance to do 3, 4, 5 hunts. So the majority of what you're going to be doing is shooting clay. So you don't want that recoil versus, you know, a Tempio Light or something that's a lighter gun that, yeah, it's a little easier to carry in the field, but you're going to take a little bit more beating because it doesn't have the weight to balance out that recoil. And then as far as the gauge go, that you can kill anything with a 20 gauge that you can kill with a 12. I tell all my students, don't get caught up in that. I have to shoot a 12 gauge because I can tell you right now, it's the Indian, not the arrow.
Okay.
So if you miss, it ain't because the gun was off. Mm-hmm. As much as you want to blame it on bent barrels, you know, it's just a matter of, did you keep your head down in the gun? Were you looking at the bird or were you looking at the bead? You just need to remember that they make more than one gun for a really good reason. So take your time. Just about every public sporting clay course out there will rent guns. Take advantage of that inventory. Find a pro staffer or a factory rep. Reach out to them and say, hey, I'm looking at purchasing this gun. Can you get one pulled down for me for a demo? You would be surprised how easy that is to do. And like I said, for anybody that's in the Virginia area, I pull guns in. I've got a gun I got to go pick up this week. Somebody wants to try the waterfowler for, as a matter of fact, and give that a whirl and see how they like that because they're thinking about making that purchase. So once you bought it, you can't take it back. So make sure that before you spend that money, you're spending on what's going to serve you well in the hunt field or on the clay course.
Have you found that it's been kind of a common occurrence that people come to you after they have just purchased a newer gun just for you or just for them to, after your instruction, find out that they really aren't shooting the ideal gun for them?
Yeah, that luckily doesn't happen as much as it used to because okay. I add that caveat in with my students. I will meet them at Green Top for free. They get an hour with me to do gun fitting in the store.
Okay.
And it's because I've run into that situation, and I would never, ever tell anybody that's so excited coming to me and saying, look what my husband just bought. He was so excited to get me into this, and he bought me this gun, and it's gun, you know, XYZ, and it's horrible. Mm-hmm. It doesn't fit. It kicks like a mule. It shoots low. You know, just problem after problem, you know, the only thing it does right is it goes bang. Mm-hmm. But you've got to very tactfully let the person know, say, okay, so don't worry. It's no big deal. Very rarely does a gun fit you off the rack. You know, to get a really well fitted gun, you do have to either have it, you know, have the ability to make those adjustments or go to a gunsmith and have those adjustments made for you. And I've got a couple of really great gunsmiths spread out around the state. One's just 10 minutes down the road from our farm. And he's fantastic, very kind. And he's worked on everything for me from, you know, Stogers to, you know, I've had a gentleman take his Purdy to him. So, mm-hmm. I just tell them it's a gun that goes bang, but we need to make it work for you. And this right. is what it's going to take. And you just, sometimes it's got to be a frank conversation.
Right. Can you talk on the importance of proper gun fit and how to determine that?
Yeah. So, I tell everyone that rib going down the top of the barrel, just think of that as an extension of your eye. And for hunting, for bird hunting and for sporting clays, we typically want to have like a 50-50 up to 65-35 split. And what that means is if you were to go out to 25 yards and shoot paper, shoot steel, 50% of the BBs would be on the top half of the line and the other 50% would be below line. And that's going to be determined with where the actual pupil is sitting on the gun or the iris. If your eye is sitting high on that rib, you're going to shoot high. And lot of people don't realize this, but 1 inch of movement in the shooter's box at 30 yards, that's an 8-foot movement either for or against you. It's just, there's a lot of geometry involved with shooting clay and feather, but we don't have the time or the need to sit down with four long chalkboards and put that equation out on the chalkboard. We just need to go, okay, there's bird, shoot bird, gun fits, don't need to work with anything else. So if your eye isn't sitting correctly on that gun, you're not going to, you can hit your target, but you're going to have to make a few adjustments. I had a group come to me the other weekend for a hunt, and this exact same thing happened. One of the girls had this fabulous Benelli autoloader that her husband had just bought her for her birthday, and it fit fine. Her eye was, you know, probably about a quarter of an inch high, and we're getting ready to go into the hunt field in less than 2 hours. So there's not so much I can do. So I just told her, I said, just see the bird above your barrel, but see a little gap between that barrel and that bird. And she went from miss, miss, miss to crush, crush, crush. Hmm. You know, so you can do things to fix the fit, but you need to make sure that the gun fits you well on the shoulder, especially for women. We need a different pitch in the toe of the gun, because I don't know if anybody's noticed or not, but we're built a little differently in the front. So
yeah,
we've got to compensate for where that gun hits our shoulder and isn't pressing actually on the mammary gland, because that, if you hold the gun too low, that you'll definitely know that you've held that gun low and hit that gland or hit that particular muscle group, because it hurts.
Yeah.
And I mean, quite frankly, if you do this and it hurts, you're not going to keep doing it. Like I've said before, this is way too much fun for it to be uncomfortable. You know, take the time, go see a professional. Your local gunsmith, a competent gunsmith, can easily do a gun fit for you if you don't have a shooting instructor that's available to you.
Mm-hmm. So as a woman interested in starting out, whether it be shooting or hunting, what is the best approach for them to start with a gun for maybe the first time or after or still being a novice to mm-hmm. help keep them comfortable, confident, and having a good experience? What should they avoid and what should they actively seek out to do?
So I usually tell people, shoot the lightest load you can find that your gun will cycle if you're not shooting a cracking gun. I typically will either give somebody, like, you know, I've got an auto loader that I love to use because it's really nice and light. It's 20 gauge and it can cycle, you know, a 7/8 ounce, 12/10 foot per second shell. And I have certain shells that I like to use. I am a bit of a shell snob. I'm sorry, Rio, but I just can't shoot you. You give me a headache by the second shot. Hmm. So I tell people, you know, just like you wouldn't go out and just grab any pair of shoes off the rack, you know, certain shoes feel better and are more comfortable. Certain guns feel more comfortable and just provide a better experience. Again, it kind of gets all into it. When you first start, you're not willing to go out and spend $2,000 or $3,000 on the gun and,
right,
you know, all the accoutrement that goes with it. So take your time. Seek out someone to help guide you through that. I tell people all the time, feel free to give me a text, or, you know, give me a call. And I'm happy to talk to you about what your options are and what you can do to get started in the sport. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, that's what I do. That's what I love to do. And it's selfish, because if we don't have new blood coming into the shooting sports and into the hunt field, one day we're all going to turn around and look at each other and go, what the hell happened? Where'd all of our hunt fields go? Why did that preserve close? Why is that shotgun range no longer open anymore? I mean, it, it can happen very easily. We, especially with all the gun control and stuff trying to be pushed through, we need to be cognizant of, we have to have more people engaged in understanding this isn't just some Yahoo with an AR-15. This is an actual sport. This is something that can be enjoyed, again, by anybody, regardless of age, infirmity, or location, and that it has a lot to offer.
What is your take on with the women's shotguns? So you and I are both very familiar with the Siren shotgun line. Mm-hmm. And have you seen, since Siren has come on board and are pretty popular now in the women's shooting and hunting, a big difference and of how that has helped women?
Yeah. The reason I was so excited to start that relationship with Siren Cesar Guarini is because they get it. When it comes to building guns for women, they get it. What I mean by that is there's several companies out there that said, oh, so I'm just going to take this gun that we normally sell to the guys and I'm going to lop off like an inch and a half off the stock and maybe paint it purple or pink and voila, it's mm-hmm. now a woman's gun or a youth gun. And that's not the case. Because there's a lot of balance that's involved in the build of the gun. Again, Siren Cesar Guarini, they actually keep the build of the gun fit to the dimensions of a woman. Again, if you haven't noticed, we're built differently. So they keep that in mind when they produce their guns, and there is a big difference. I've got lots of guns in my school gun collection, and there is a big difference when somebody picks up one of my other guns and then I put one of, like, let's say the Elos D2, which is their hybrid field gun and sporting glaze gun.
Yes.
Put that gun in their hand and they pull the trigger and they're like, oh, wow. Mm-hmm. That's nice. I was like, yeah, I mean,
I love that gun.
It's built. Yeah. Oh, I do too. I'm
so glad that you said that about the clay, that's a good hybrid for clays and fields.
Yeah.
Because I think so too. I've said that over and over. I love that, to be able to do both, because there's not much recoil on it. It's just super mm-mm. balanced.
It's really got a great weight. And yeah. They also, you know, my husband will tell you, I am not a girly girl. I'm sure he wishes I was more girly sometimes, but I'm not a big fan of the roses. I mean, I've told Wes and Deirdre this with Siren, and they know, but that's why I love the D2, because it's sans roses, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a really nice gun for those of us that are looking for a well-fitting gun, really good fitting gun that is capable of taking us to more than just the hunt field or more right. than just the clay course. I mean, you can take that out dove hunting. You can take that through the woods and go for woodcock and grouse. It's just a very functional gun. And
it's my go-to for pheasant.
Yeah. I mm-hmm. mean, it's just a fantastic gun. It's just one of many that they offer. And it's just, again,
and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
The integral plating. I love it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And, I know the case coloring is usually where everybody kind of oohs and ahs because it's a beautiful gun. It's just like the new Julia that has come out. That's another one that's an ooh and ah. I actually had them, Wes and Deirdre, come down to a pheasant ring shoot that I put on with the Preserve at Dundee in February. And they brought down a bunch of guns and Julia was one of them. And I was like, ooh, I get to see her in person. And she's gorgeous.
Yeah. How does the weight feel? She's a little heavier than the other Sirens.
Yeah. So I kind of put it as, you know, Julia, she's not going to be for your person who just one day woke up and said, I'm going to go and buy a gun and get into hunting and shooting clay. Mm-hmm. It's for, you know, someone like myself who has been doing it for a while, that's more experienced, that wants to add that kind of bespoke piece to their collection.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a beautiful gun. And the functionality and the action in it is just, it's tremendous. So it's for someone that is on a little bit more seasoned level shooter.
Sure.
It's just offering something else, you know, because you find yourself as a gun manufacturer. Okay. I'm making women's guns, but I want to make women's guns for all kinds of women shooters, not just that house mom that's decided the kids are grown and I'm going to go out and start shooting clay and feather. You know, mm-hmm. You need to kind of cover the full gamut of your market.
Talking about what we should be doing in the off season right now to prepare for season, how mm-hmm. often do you recommend that we be shooting, and what should we be shooting?
Every day. I'll write everybody a prescription
every day.
For their boss every day. No, you should be going out realistically twice a month.
Okay.
That tends to, and I'm just being very, very realistic of people being pulled in all sorts of other directions. One thing I have noticed from the pandemic is it's been really nice that people have had more freedom with the kids being remote and with people doing Zoom meetings. It is not uncommon for someone to pull up. They see me over near my car or truck and I'm getting the golf cart loaded up for their lesson, and they roll down the window and they kind of give me the motion of, I'll be with you in a second. I'm finishing up my Zoom.
Okay.
And, I had one dad come out and he's like, hey, you know, she's almost ready. She's just got to finish up geometry real quick. And I just started to laugh. I'm like, this is so fantastic. We're so much more mobile. But you know, with everybody's lifestyles, if you can get out, a matter of fact, one of my lessons today, this guy shoots 5 days a week, but he's retired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is what he does. Most people, they're not going to be able to shoot 5 days a week. They're going to shoot, you know, they'll be lucky to get to the clay course 5 days a month. So if you can get out at least every other weekend or something, always better if you can get there in the weekday because it's not as crowded. That will certainly help to keep you honed in. I know the men and women in my area enjoy the fact that every other month I try to put together a practice session for 2 hours for the guys, 2 hours for the girls. And I find that if you have a buddy, you will do better at getting out to practice. Left to your own devices, you might have the best of intentions of grabbing your gun and getting to the course, but other things, you know, life happens.
Sure.
But if you've got somebody calling or texting like, hey, are you ready to go yet? I'm waiting in the driveway. You'll be a lot more motivated to get in the car and go to the course.
Mm-hmm. Do you think sporting clays are the best option for what's more realistic for hunting?
Yeah, they're gonna offer you so many more different presentations. Between trap and skeet, trap is going to be great for if you just want to work on that flushing bird shot. But the problem is the birds don't always read the script. You know, particularly chucker, they get up nice and slow and they start to head straight out up in front of you. But depending on the wind and sun and stuff like that, they might very well turn. And now you've gone from a straightaway quartering flushing shot to you've got this, you know, kind of picking up speed crossing shot at a funky angle over to the left.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where practicing on a sporting clay field will definitely help hone in those skills. On the skeet field, I always tell everybody stations like 3, 4, and 5. Those offer some good crossing opportunities. Anytime you can get out and shoot at a clay, you're going to be working on your skills. So if you only have a trap field to go to, that's just fine. I mean, it's, you know, take what you can get, but ideally sporting clays is going to offer you the best, you know, no pun intended, bang for the buck.
Right.
To get you dialed in for the next season.
So as a bird hunter that's doing the sporting clays or the trap or the skeet, Are you recommending that they start out shouldered? Or yeah. Are you okay?
Yeah, so definitely.
Okay.
Try and take away as many variables as you can. So start with the gun itself. Have something that's not going to kick the snot out of them. Have a lighter shell that's not going to kick them. Have a gun that fits them. And have them start with the gun mounted and shouldered. Because when they start low ready, the chances of them dipping and digging and blowing the flight line versus if they start mounted, they're going to be able just to see the bird, push right to the bird. Starting low ready, now we've got the complication of, well, they've got to get the gun up. There's somebody that hasn't practiced how to just even roll their shoulder back to get the gun out of their face. I mean, there's so many more variables that you introduce starting with the gun down in some form or fashion, whether it's just rolling their shoulder and dropping the gun back down a little bit, or if it's just completely starting with the gun on their side.
Okay.
So starting mounted is always the best, and then work your way up. And that's something that I do in hunt practice. We start mounted and then we practice how to start with the gun at low ready. And then we practice how to start with the gun at low ready and how to walk up onto birds. You'd be amazed at how just those three or four steps added in just throws people off. They're like, wait, I got to walk with the gun. I'm like, yep. Mm-hmm. And you can do it.
What do you find is like one of the most common things that we're doing wrong as shooters in general?
Oh, trying to break the bird.
Okay.
I know that sounds crazy. And I get a lot of people that look at me going, you are not inexpensive as an instructor.
Yeah. Explain that.
I am paying you to teach me how to break that bird. I'm like, no, I am teaching you how to perform a process repeatedly and consistently. And the result will be a broken bird if you correctly perform the process. And that's the big thing. People see the bird and just snap shoot. They want to just break the bird. They want to break the bird so bad they can't understand that, okay, so you have certain things that are involved. And like I said earlier, there's a lot of geometry involved and you can't fight against it. I mean, it's going to take place whether you're either with it or you're getting left behind. So understanding the bird in front of you and how to shoot that bird is paramount in order to break it. And it translates, it transfers into the hunt field. You go to the clay course, you practice, you get out onto the hunt field, and now all of a sudden this pheasant gets up in front of you 20 yards out, you know, hot and heavy, headed for the wood line, and you drop it and cartwheel it in a heap. And it's because as you're seeing that bird get up, you're like, oh, that's that number two trap on a station on 7th station out at that course I was shooting at the other day. So when the bird flies, it's mimicking clay that you've already seen. You already know the sight picture. Mm-hmm. It's built up in your shot inventory. So that's why we need to go and practice and keep those skills honed in and build that shot inventory.
What about for people that have been shooting the same way for a very long time, and then we come to you and you say, you need to change it up. You should be shooting this way. Is that difficult? I mean, how do you reform that muscle memory to be able to improve your shooting when it's almost instinct, especially hunting?
Yeah. So, this happens with, you know, particularly my older male students. You know, they've been shooting one-eyed off their right side forever. And I do an eye dominance test. I'm like, well, you're actually really strong left eye dominant. And ideally what they should do is shoot under the left eye, which means switching shoulders. But I've got someone in front of me that's been doing this for 30, 40 years. I'm not going to change them. You know, that I ask them, are you trying to go to the Olympics? Is this going to be your next career? No, you just want to be able to break more birds. So let's work with what you got, and we can make some little little adjustments, and I can show you a few tricks to help you understand what to do to make that bird break in front of you or add that extra bird to your bag in the hunt field. So I don't tend to, depending on the shooter. Now, with that being said, if I have a 14-year-old standing in front of me who's been shooting for 2, 3, 4 years and has a little bit of experience, if they come to me and they've started off the wrong way, I'm going to completely, you know, start them over. They don't have 30, 40 years of habits. So it's a lot easier for them to mold and to try something different. But it's just a matter of who I have in front of me and what exactly we're trying to do.
Okay. What do you find that you're spending the most time on teaching about?
Bird barrel relationship.
Okay. In what way?
Understanding what you need to do to break the bird. There's three things involved when you're dealing with a bird: speed, angle, and distance. And I always like to ask people, you know, of those three things, what's the most important? And I, you know, I can have a group of three or four shooters in front of me, and invariably most of them will say either speed or distance. Every now and then I get one that kind of thinks about it for a second and says, well, angle. And it's usually someone that's been engaged in shooting clay before and has had the pleasure of seeing that chandelle or seeing a bird with kind of a hot, fast angle kind of dropping. So they're absolutely correct. Of those three factors, angle is always the biggest, and helping people understand what the bird is doing in front of them. That's usually the biggest thing that we spend the most amount of time on. And that's because that's the most important thing. Okay. If you think the bird is rising and it's really twisted and falling, and you're trying to shoot the bird up at 10 o'clock and you need to be down underneath the bird to the left for a right to left bird, you need to be down at 8 o'clock. You're never going to hit it. You know, so it's just a matter of helping them understand that bird barrel relationship and what the bird is doing, what that angle is dictating.
Very interesting, Kate. I've learned a ton from you during this. Yeah. So if you could, I always like to ask people what your favorite game bird recipe is.
Oh, my pheasant salad sliders.
What's that?
So this is after all of my hunts, and I joke with everyone. I'm like, you know, I don't know if you guys are here for the hunt or for the food and cocktail hour afterwards, because I believe in throwing a good time, and a good time always involves good food and good drink. Pheasant salad sliders, basically, not that we ever need another reason to eat a King's Hawaiian roll, but it's just another great use for it. Basically, throw a couple of pheasant breasts onto the grill, pellet grill, and smoke them, bring them up to about medium, pull it off the bone, shred it, add mayonnaise, finely chopped celery, onions, chopped walnuts, golden raisins, little salt, little pepper, stir it all together and slap it on that Hawaiian roll. And it is absolutely divine.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's like a chicken salad, but that sweetness from the grill and that little bit of earthy game flavor from the pheasant, it just adds a lot more depth to the sandwich. That and my chukar chili are probably my two favorite recipes.
Yeah.
Definitely gotten too hot to serve the chukar chili after hunts right now, but it was fabulous in the colder months.
Yeah, you're going to have to send me those recipes.
Yeah, everybody's been on me. I got to get this posted on my website.
There you go. Speaking of website, Kate, tell us where we can find you and how we can connect with you, get some instruction from you.
Absolutely. Just simply go to virginiashootingsports.com. You can also go to vashootingsports.com. You can find me on Facebook. Again, Virginia Shooting Sports, also on Instagram under the same handle. You can always give me a call, 804-512-2771, or drop me an email, Kate, K-A-T-E, at vashootingsports.com.
Oh my gosh. You gave out your phone number. You're going to get phone calls.
I hope so. I okay. hope so. But I got to tell you, if you're calling me about my car warranty, I already have a very good friend in India who has that covered. So don't call me about my car warranty, my student debt, or my social security number. I'm covered on that.
You're awesome, Kate. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. It was fantastic, Courtney. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, share it and tag me and someone that would benefit from listening. Please help me out by giving the podcast a rating and review on whichever platform you're listening from, and hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Be sure to join me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And if you're interested in some Bird Dog Babe swag or gear that I rely on, be sure to check out the store on thebirddogbabe.com. And most importantly, don't forget to support the organizations that are working hard to conserve the birds you're chasing after and the public lands in which you hunt.